The ACA marketplace was built to make coverage more accessible. Now, CMS says accessibility may have gone a bit too far. A sweeping new final rule tightens enrollment verification, shortens enrollment windows, changes subsidy enforcement, and puts sharper scrutiny on broker conduct, of course, all in the name of program integrity. Supporters say it's overdue cleanup. Critics say it creates new barriers for the very people the ACA was meant to help. So what's really in this rule? Who gets hit the hardest? And what do benefits professionals need to know before the next enrollment cycle? Let's get into it.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us for Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Benefits and Insurance Professionals.
And I'm your host, David Saltzman. To help us understand all of this, we've invited Emily Trevino, a leader in NABIP's individual working group, and someone deeply engaged in the practical realities of the ACA individual marketplace. Emily is the senior managing partner at Wise Partners. She works at the intersection of policy and real-world consumer enrollment, helping benefits professionals understand how regulatory changes actually affect clients, carriers, and brokers. Emily, welcome to Healthcare Happy Hour.
Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. For someone who's only heard the phrase marketplace integrity and affordability final rule, what's the rule really trying to accomplish? Is it fundamentally an anti-fraud rule, a cost control rule, or some philosophical shift in ACA policy?
Here's my personal opinion about this whole thing is, and we have to go back to historically what has happened, right? When during COVID, when we had the Inflation Reduction Act pass, it was so that people could access healthcare easier. And so they wanted to be able to make sure people had insurance, because if you're in the middle of July and you don't have access to health insurance and there's no enrollment window, they had to start creating ways for people to access health insurance. So they did that. But in doing that, when you create that access and it, and then they got rid of a lot of the restrictions that helped people access it correctly, right? So things like document verifications that we had to submit, confirming special election periods, things like income documentation, immigration documentation, all of these things were just kind of like, we're not going to verify anything. If you fill out the application online, looks good, we're going to issue you subsidy. Good luck. Have a good day. Now, what ended up happening was you created a huge opportunity for people to that are not always the best people in the business, right? People that are part of NABIP, we want what's good for the consumers. We want what's good for the insurer, for the insurance companies. We need them to be financially sustainable. So when all this happened, it's like a cause and effect, created a huge opportunity for bad actors to come into the space. And they don't truly do what you and I do, or what brokers or agents that are part of NABIP do, where we actually help the consumer do more than just access a policy, right? So it's a little bit of everything that you mentioned.
Why did they feel the need to make these changes at this point? Were there, like you kind of alluded to, some specific abuses? Were there enrollment concerns or policy failures? Why now?
Well, first off, both of those things are very true. So number one, we had a huge fraud issue with clients being enrolled. I mean, there's clients that were enrolled 137 different times without their knowledge. Now, yes, is there going to be a client that enrolls with Jane Doe, then Emily Trevino, then Kim Nguyen? Sure, that does happen. But it doesn't happen to somebody 127 times. It doesn't even happen to somebody 37 times. So it's very easy to access the systems. You do certification and you get your appointments. And some of that just people weren't being held accountable at the time because there wasn't a need. Before COVID, all the ACA agents or agents selling ACA were operating wonderfully. And then it also created a backlog and a complete data nightmare for the insurance carriers. You have a client enrolled for a 1-1 effective. Now they're enrolled something else for a 2-1, then enrolled for a 3-1, and then back. You know, it's too much for the insurer to be able to handle all the influx of data. And then it's inaccurate as soon as they get it. But also they can't really focus on quality of care and delivering quality of care to the consumer whenever you don't even know if they're going to be on the books next month, or you think they're on the books and they're not. So the amount of plan switching, while it's illegal and while our federal agencies have been going after them, cracking down hard, it was very difficult on the consumers being enrolled without their knowledge, and also the carriers having to deliver care when they don't even know that this person's even a member. I mean, we have people that were enrolled that are no longer on this planet. So how that happens, I don't know, because I don't spend enough time being shady.
What changes will the average ACA consumer actually notice first? Will it feel like inconvenience or a genuine loss of access?
I'd venture to say that if you have a loss of access, it's going to be rather inconvenient, right? I mean, I think one of the biggest changes right now is there was wasn't an extension of tax credits. And because of that, we already saw a huge book or a huge block of Americans fall off the books because they just simply couldn't afford what they were used to accessing before, right? Now, if you're a great agent, like a lot of our agents are with NABIP, then you're going to offer them other options. I wholeheartedly love for everybody to have traditional health insurance because you're protected no matter what happens to you. But if you simply can't afford it, I don't want you to go without anything. So then you start looking at other ancillary options that is affordable for them to access, which I will also say some of the things that we're seeing in the market is that with those extensions going away, we also saw premiums going up. We saw deductibles going up to $10,600. I remember when deductibles were like $6,000. The average American does not have $10,600 just chilling in a bank account, right? They, you know, naturally they're like, why am I going to pay a premium if I, you know, and I don't even have this to even start with my high deductible plan. So it is rather inconvenient. And then also network disruption is causing a huge issue nationally and especially in our rural communities. Hospital systems, physicians, providers not accepting these ACA plans. There's children's hospitals, there are cancer centers that don't take them. So that is truly, in my opinion, a loss of access. And I know that there's a way. There is a way for the providers, the insurers, the agents, and the consumers to collectively win as a unit rather than individually. We just got to get them together.
Is that something NABIP's working on right now?
Yes. So on the individual working group, we actually do a lot of options. We're always looking for creative options, right? We're not just looking at complaining and going to legislators and complaining. That's not going to move the needle when you're talking to Congress, when you're talking to the agency. I will say this, and politics aside, whether you're Republican or Democrat, it doesn't matter with NABIP because healthcare, we need both parties to be successful here, right? And I will say this administration has been the most open-minded to hearing our feedback. At CMS, CSIO, the GAO, they are very big on wanting to listen to what the actual problem is. And they always ask, what's a great first step for a solution? So when we get on calls with them, we're not just complaining. But that's not going to move the needle. We have to have solutions. So on our individual working group, we'll bring up a topic and then we start providing, okay, here's the issue. Here's a few examples in various states. If you're in a certain state, we want to know about those issues. There was a great survey that NABIP put out to all the Medicare and ACA agents that their consumers could get their voice heard. And then we're able to put that in front of their congressman. Because I'll tell you what, when I go to Florida, I'm in Texas. When I go to Florida, they don't really want to talk to me. They want to talk to somebody who's a voter in Florida. So when I can say, hey, look, I'm not a voter, but here are your voters, and here's their real life examples, and that paints a picture for them that makes absolute sense to where they're like, okay, we need to actually pay attention to this. So this administration is actually pretty good at listening to us. NABIP is working with all these agencies, and because they're willing to listen, it makes the job easier. We have to educate them as well. And keep in mind, some of the issues that we have is because we have a new administration every 4 years. You're re-educating and retraining people on healthcare on just this side of healthcare, while also competing with hospital lobbying groups, medical associations, insurer lobbying groups. So it takes a lot of effort. And that's why I really, truly appreciate NABIP giving a space for agents and brokers to sit at tables so they can share their real life stories with our legislators and agencies.
And the more you sit at the table, the less likely you are to end up on the menu.
Yeah. Well, we were on the menu quite a bit in the previous administration.
That's true.
And that was really tough. So I'm glad we're on to a path forward for sure.
One of the biggest changes is tighter verification around special enrollment periods. What exactly is changing and does it make the legitimate enrollments any more difficult.
So what I love about this is the rule that was established at the inception of the ACA by President Obama. So this is not a Republican or Democrat issue. President Obama said, hey, this is a great way to monitor this and manages to make sure people are just not enrolling just to enroll. Okay. And here's why people do that, right? So if I get client Jane Doe and she enrolls in January and then she's like, you know what? I don't want to pay for my premium. I'll just get it when I need it. Gets, you know, misuses an SEP and joins in July. Insurers are going to go broke. And then all of a sudden she's got cancer. So now she's like, needs it for cancer. The thing is that what we pay in health insurance premium doesn't really cover our cost of care, but collectively as a pool of people, it does. So we need people to stay on the books and with the same carrier for a period of time, if possible. So when all these rules went out the window, that's what led to all these fraudulent changes. Because here's the deal. You can't enroll somebody 137 times if there's a verification of a document. Because where would you get the document? You would have to talk to the client. Now, could somebody go out of their way and create stuff? Sure. But the standard person who's doing shady practices are lazy. So they're taking the path of least resistance. They're not trying to, you know, fraudulently create documents. That would be wild. You should just do it the legitimate way. Now, what I'll say is back then, when Obamacare or when ACA was started with President Obama, they would give you 60 days to verify your documents, but your plan would already start. The big change that happened this year is that if you're going to send in, let's say we enrolled somebody in ACA early this morning, it's May 22nd, they just moved to Houston. We submitted their move-in verification documents that they moved here, and they need to, CMS needs to approve that document before they start their plan on June 1st. Now, it might take CMS longer than a week and a half to do that. So if it does, it's okay. It'll retro back. Once they verify that that SEP is valid, it will retro back to June 1st. So it's great, but it's a little bit of delay of care. So when we enroll people, I would say 2 to 3 weeks out of the effective date, we want to let them know like, hey, if you need to go to the doctor or something, or if you have something going on, this is going to take a little bit. They have to verify. We've never had an issue when we've told the consumer exactly what to expect. It's the surprises that create the inconvenience. So
always, you know, it's just like calls to action. If you don't tell the consumer what to do, they won't do it. So it's an important part of the sales process. Now, CMS is also getting stricter about premium tax credit reconciliation. Can you explain that to the rest of us in English, please?
Yes, I am great at layman's term talking.
Awesome.
So when it comes to payment reconciliation, in the past, if somebody qualified for a tax credit at whatever level of the federal poverty limit, if you made more than that, then you would have a repayment cap. Like it was capped, the amount you would have to repay back in your taxes. But what they ended up doing is they found out that a lot of people were lying about their income. And at the same time, nobody was asking for income verification documents. So it was easy to just be like, oh yeah, just go ahead and do it, you know? Where we saw the biggest infraction was people at 100% of the federal poverty limit in states that didn't expand Medicaid. Because it would be very easy for me to say, hey, Miss Jane Doe, you know, the minimum is $15,000 and you make $12,000. Do you think you can work a few more hours and get your $15,000 so you could pay zero for your premium? And of course, she's going to say yes. But then come tax time, she's not going to remember she did that. So it created a big liability on agents that did that practice. But her worst case scenario was she was going to have to pay $300 and some change. And that's still not a bad deal for her at that time. Now in 2026 and moving forward, they said no more repayment caps. You're going to pay back the entire subsidy. And that is very scary for people who are lower income. If you're getting a $500, $600, even $1,000 tax credit times 12, if you didn't have that money each month to pay for the premium to begin with, you certainly don't have $12,000 to give back at tax time. And when you have a tax bill due, it's crazy. I will tell you, and what I tell agents, one of the best practices we have is we have a quarterly text message that goes out to all of our subsidy recipients asking them, do you have a change in income? Did your income increase? Did you get a raise? Did you inherit something? Whatever. Did you sell a home? Anything with a change in income so that we can update it to minimize their tax liability of this tax credit. Everything has to match on their taxes.
How many consumers actually get blindsided because they ignore IRS paperwork? Is it a big problem?
So I think this varies based on the agent and who they are. For us, it's not a big problem because we're a stickler. We will not work with a client that we feel is not being honest about their income. It's a red flag for us. We want to operate a compliant business. I mean, I'm sitting here on NABIP and talking with CMS. I can't be doing shady practices, okay?
Right.
So we'll walk away from business if we can't get it. So we don't see it as a big issue. But at the end of the day, the agent can only do so much. We ask the questions and they give it to us. And that's why I do really like this document verification. Because even if they don't require it, we still ask for the documents so we have it on file. But I like it because it keeps everybody honest and it protects the agent and the consumer. So statistically, I don't know how many are inconvenienced or don't know, but I will tell you, we get phone calls all the time of people who were blindsided that were not our clients because an agent just enrolled them or a call center just enrolled them and didn't really ask them additional questions. Another good tip for agents out there is to ask additional questions about their income, not just say, are you W-2 or 1099? Ask, do you have capital gains? Do you have rental property? Do you have distributions? Especially your retirees from 60 to 64, they are pulling money from pensions and things like that. Or maybe they're taking Social Security and didn't realize their beach house that they rent out on Airbnb is income. So we do a really thorough job of asking additional questions so that we capture all the income. And that happens, I would say, at least 30% of the time we're catching additional income that wasn't originally presented to us.
Yeah, it's just like the way they, when they do hit Medicare age and they go into Medicare, it's just like the IRMA requirements. You know, if you make too much money, all of a sudden your Medicare rates change and you go, where did that come from? Well, you've got all these things that you just enumerated that y'all didn't tell us.
Exactly. And so that's why I do sometimes if they have it available, like their 1040 tax return or something, we love to see that. We know exactly what we're looking for. There's a lot of agents that just haven't been educated on that. But, you know, we definitely work to say, hey, look for these things so that you put the best estimate of income on it.
Yeah. Run a tight ship. And that way, neither you or your clients get into any problems. So let's move along into a different part of this. The rule clearly includes tougher oversight of brokers and agents. What should benefits professionals be paying attention to right now? And is this, again, mostly due to bad actors, or will compliant brokers feel operational pain too?
So brokers are feeling operational pain, and it's something that I have talked to CMS about as well, or shared some stories, because the first obstacle we have going into this annual enrollment period is we literally have to enroll all of America in 45 days. And a lot of health insurance agents do both Medicare, they do ACA, and some of them do small group business. And it just so happens they all got to be enrolled in the last 2 or 3 months of the year. So I'm a little concerned about the starting November 1st through December 15th, right? Now, the other operational side that was just a complete nightmare last year is we had to do three-way phone calls. So that means you have to wait on hold. If your client speaks English well, then it was not as terrible. But, you know, we have a lot of the population that speaks Spanish, Chinese, Vietnamese, Lao, Thai, Korean. Like, we work with a lot of our agents speak all those languages. Not one agent and all those languages, but you know what I mean? So those phone calls would take forever. And it was inconsistent on the process. Like, you could have one phone call where they're enrolling the whole client and they put you as agent record. You could have another where they're like, all right, go ahead and finish enrolling them. So CMS did a lot of work, and I really appreciated their efforts because based on our feedback, they were cleaning it up. So the three-way phone call was tough. Consent, I think, is very important. I think we should have that. You need to give me permission to go and log in because I can see your social and everything about you and your children and your family. So that is fine. But the verification. So I wish the consent and the verification of the application would be kind of the same. So what I explained to CMS is I said, hey, look, every time you put another thing the consumer has to do, it's less likely you're going to bring that consumer back because there's so many steps along the way. Because consent, you know, their consent's kind of vague, but we try to make it as specific as possible, text it out in language. There's not a lot of support there in those languages. And we like for people to read stuff that they're comfortable reading, right? One thing to read a language versus speak it, right? So I think having the three-way phone calls, the consent, the attestation, of the plan verification. I think it was too many steps in the process, because it used to take about 20 minutes to enroll a family of four. Now it's taken 45 minutes. And now you've shrunk my time to enroll all these people. So we're going to see what some of the solutions are that CMS pops out. But it became an operational burden on agents. I don't know that any of those actually solved any problems, because consents, you only need to keep on record should you get audited. But if you're a fraud dog agent out there going rogue, you can still enroll somebody and just said you had their consent. So, but I know that CMS and carriers are identifying these agents and getting them termed.
Are these shorter enrollment windows changing behavior? I mean, is it creating urgency or just chaos or some of both?
I think it's going to be a little bit of both. So obviously we're urgent. It's going to create a sense of urgency for the people that worry about it. But consumers have been enrolling until January 15th forever. And they've been auto-enrolled if they didn't do anything, and they could still make a change for 15 days into January, right? So we're getting rid of that. So agents have to do a really great job about educating the community of, hey, this window has shrunk. You need to take action now. I know we normally start reaching out to our book of business or our clients in September. We will start reaching out in August and start getting their consents and start getting them informed ahead of time, because we want to make sure, we've always tried to make sure everyone was done by December 15th. So January 1, they're fresh, but we would have our stragglers just kind of, oh, I didn't know, I didn't see it, you know, so we're going to have to work really hard to get in front of them faster.
When you step back from the politics, who benefits from this rule and who gets hurt?
From the shortened window?
Yeah, well, just from all of this altogether. I mean, you've got carriers, you've got CMS, you've got brokers, you've got consumers, you got all those folks in the mix. Is anybody winning? Is anybody losing? Or is it just figure it out?
I don't think anybody's winning, to be honest. I don't think the carriers win. They are going to get an influx of enrollments, especially with auto enrollments going away. I don't see how the consumers win either. Giving them some time, I'm giving somebody 45 days to do an enrollment when all of America is doing their enrollment at the same time is just, it's a backlog. So I feel like you're backlogging on the carrier, the consumer, and the agent. And I think, too, the quality of the presentation is going to suffer a little bit, because you're like, oh, I have 45 days. I got to enroll everybody in my book of business. And you're not going to be able to spend as much time explaining things to people. But I will say technology's helped a lot with that, because you can mass communicate and get things, you can educate faster that way. But I would like to do a thorough assessment and review all of every little piece of coverage. But you can't spend an hour with every client when you just can't hire enough people. There's not enough agents to do that all of the season. I know someone's going to be on here listening like, well, I spent an hour with my client. And I love that for you, but you also probably don't have 10,000 clients that you're trying. I can't get agents in fast enough and spend that much time. So I don't think anyone benefits from that rule. I will say I do love the fact the only benefit is that everybody will start January 1 and they will have a plan January 1. And so they have a fresh start. I mean, that could be the only benefit, but even then I would rather have the flexibility for the stragglers.
It's like the doctors who only have 7 minutes to see each patient, then they have to move on. It's a whole different animal.
That's exactly right. Like the quality suffers when you are in mass quantity, right? So we're trying to leverage tools like AI compliantly. We can't use it for HIPAA things or PHI things. So we're trying to figure out how to use technology to help alleviate some of it. But at the end of the day, it's going to be chaos for sure.
If I'm a broker and I'm serving the individual market, what operational changes should I be making immediately, doc, in terms of like maybe documentation or workflow or just educating my book?
So immediately you need to be using technology. I see a lot of field agents who are using their enrollment platform. I use Health Sherpa. I love Health Sherpa. I think they've been the most agent friendly out of all of them, but it's not a plug for them, but I just like them. So I think that it has to go beyond that. You have to be able to mass text. You need to be able to record your calls. I will tell you that we're not just worried about enrolling all of America. We also have to do compliantly. We have to be able to watch our backs in the process. I mean, we're subject to audits from CMS. We're subject to audits from the carriers. You need to be able to pull your documentation. I will tell you, every one of our agents who have made it through, had an audit, made it through positively. They have all their stuff organized and systematized, and all because we create a system and a process and keep it really simple, stupid. Not because people are stupid, it's just we just got to keep it simple.
So as we finish up here, if brokers take away just one practical lesson from today's conversation, What would it be?
There's a lot I said in there. Okay, let's see. The one most practical thing, I think that you need to leverage technology to help you reach your clients faster and help educate them quicker to build that sense of urgency. You should be working with your uplines to do that. They know how to do this. Don't isolate yourself out there and look at these Facebook groups as a resource. Get with your uplines to help you work through your technology, because that is what's going to save you and help you renew that entire book of business on time.
And that's a great place to end our conversation today. Emily Trevino, leader in NABIP's, NABIP's Individual Working Group, and someone deeply engaged in the practical realities. Thanks for schooling us in those, and we look forward to chatting again.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
You can have the Healthcare Happy Hour podcast downloaded automatically by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also find a link to the podcast in the member-exclusive Washington Update, published on Fridays. For more information on our government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit nabip.org.